Welcome back to Far From Perfect. I am your host, Kylie Larson, and today I'm talking to a dynamite friend of mine, Lottie Roberts. Lottie founded a company called Mind You, and she's in New Zealand, where she helps people navigate change. She is an expert in change. She helps companies embrace, lead, and navigate change mindfully because change done well is mindfulness in action. So in this episode, we are going to be talking about mindfulness, what it is, how you can practice mindfulness, and also self-compassion. And I don't think there is anyone out there that does not need to listen to this episode because life is hard. And especially right now, life is challenging. Chances are you are feeling overwhelmed. If you are not burnt out, you are on the edge of burnout. And one way we can help make life a little bit easier, although it may not feel like it in the moment, and feel a little less overwhelmed, is by practicing some self-compassion. So along with the mindfulness, Lottie explains to us, what is self-compassion? How can we practice self-compassion? And it is not soft, right? This is a little bit different than self-care, but also self-care is not soft, but self-compassion is really, really hard. And I don't want to steal too much away from the episode. Lottie is going to explain why it's so hard for us to be compassionate towards ourselves, even though we are oftentimes extremely compassionate towards the other people in our lives. So I know you're going to enjoy listening to Lottie because she has a beautiful accent. So come for the accent, stay for the content, and look in the show notes for how you can connect with Lottie. Her website is mindyou, mindyou.co.nz. Enjoy. Welcome back to Far From Perfect, everyone. I am here today with my dear friend, Lottie Roberts, and we're going to talk a lot about self-compassion, maybe get into emotions. If we don't get into emotions today, we'll definitely do that again, because as you mentioned, they all go hand in hand. But without me blabbering on too much, can you tell everyone who you are and what it is that you do?
Okay. So my name is Lottie. I live in New Zealand, although I'm originally from the UK. I've been here 18 years. I'm a mum of three gorgeous boys and a wife. And in terms of the work that I do, so I always kind of stumble when I think to explain it because there's so many like parts to it. So I run a small company called Mind You. And what I do is I go into a lot of my work is around mindful workplaces, mindful leaders, and helping people to lead mindful lives through the work of embracing emotions, self-compassion, emotional literacy, and sort of mindfulness. My tagline is helping people and organizations flourish from the inside out. So there's a lot of mindset to that.
Beautiful. Now, this is not what you've always done.
No.
Can you tell us what you were doing before you had Mind You?
Yeah. So I've only been in running this business for just over 4 years. And I like to say it was a beautiful accident, actually, that I even started this business up. So before that, I worked in the corporate world, primarily in banking and telecom. So you're quite different. As a senior executive, my speciality was kind of leading large transformations and change programs. My last job before I left the corporate world very burnt out, was a head of strategic change and transformation. I led a business unit of about 200 people. And so it was a pretty full-on job. Throughout my whole career, really what's really attracted me to the roles that I have done was all around helping people through some kind of change. Mm-hmm. That was obviously change programs. But even the work I do now is really about helping people navigate change, this ever-changing beast that is our lives, really, mm-hmm. And how to deal with that, because we find change really difficult and it causes us a lot of suffering. So, yeah, that I was in that kind of work for just over 20 years, mm-hmm. And increasingly kind of, I would say, moved away from my core values in terms of how I was showing up, mm-hmm. and the kind of work I was doing, because before I left, it was really, I was really not in a good place. I got more and more burnt out. I think burnout doesn't happen like a big bang. Mm-hmm. It's like under the surface, you know, it's like one of those kind of fires that you don't even know is going on, and the smoke's rising and you can't feel the heat until it gets to a point when you're really badly burnt. And that was kind of me.
Well, and also, I mean, you were a professional athlete.
Yes, yeah. So that's also, you're probably getting a picture of me as a bit of an A-type person.
And
you wouldn't be wrong. Yes, I am. So I was also a runner, a long distance runner, and got quite competitive pretty late on, actually, in my 30s. And I seem to have a natural affinity to it. So I wasn't like an Olympic runner, but I was a sponsored athlete that would win national medals sort of on the circuit. And, you know, I go half. I've traditionally gone hard in everything. So it's like, if you're going to run through a marathon.
Right.
So yes, physically, I've always been very interested in sport and like just kind of getting my body performing well. Mm-hmm. Although I think when you get to really high performance, actually, it's, again, physically, I got to a point where I was physically burnt out, mm-hmm. emotionally burnt out, mentally burnt out, just because I've always just been that kind of go hard, go home kind of mentality, which is very different to how I live my life now.
Well, and I wanted to bring that up because we'll see a lot of people talking about self-compassion and all of these things. And I think a lot of my audience can't relate to them because mm-hmm. they haven't done what you've done. Like, I feel we need someone who has been like us, the go hard, you know, you're either all like, if you're not going to do it all the way, what's the point? Mm-hmm. But now you've changed your tune because you've realized something that's more sustainable. Like, we can connect with you because you're totally yeah. opposite now.
I hope so. And I think, I spent a lot of time, I didn't realize actually probably how hard I was on myself. You know, and on a lot of it, you know, you go to a therapist, they always say it starts in childhood, and it's so true, you know. Yeah. The kind of person that, you know, my parents, I was the oldest of four, got three younger brothers, a lot of expectation on me, reasonably naturally bright and had an affinity to anything I turned my hand at, but had a lot of expectation on me. But I realize now a lot of that was driven by myself. The kind of thing, you come home, you've got a report card that's 95% great, but there's 5% of some comments, and my parents would totally pick on that. Yep. And I think that kind of started to get me in that overachieving kind of habitual way of living and being and thinking. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, something I also talk about quite openly is I've actually suffered from anxiety for a lot of my life. I didn't even know it was anxiety, but I was probably on hyper alert for everything, for people criticizing me, for things in my environment that might be a threat to me. And I think with people that are anxious, sometimes they do look like nervous people, but for me, I was an overachiever, anxious person. You know, that's how I compensated. Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't really realized I wasn't a compassionate person because I've always had a lot of compassion to other people, for other people. But I got to a point where I was kind of, I like to use the analogy of spinning plates. I was spinning lots of plates. I was spinning the career plate, going up the ladder. I was spinning the motherhood plate because I'd started to have children. I was spinning the athlete plate, and it was kind of a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. And then when I had my second child, I ended up, because this is kind of a catalyst, although it was nearly 12 years ago, I ended up with postnatal depression. I was still running. I actually ran through both of my first pregnancies. I even won half marathons when I was like 6 months pregnant. It's just ridiculous when I talk about it now. And then I ended up like physically very injured. I started to get a lot of problems in my pelvis, and then I had postnatal depression. And I'd always been someone that if something had gone wrong in life, I was like, right, I'll just find a plan. I'll find something. I'll do the plan, and then it will be okay. But I had to kind of sit with that uncomfortableness mm-hmm. and pain, physical pain and mental pain. And that's how I came to mindfulness. So because it wasn't like I came into mindfulness after I left the corporate world. I actually came into it, you know, at a point where I would say was my biggest point of suffering. mm-hmm. Which was driven by myself,
right,
and by me not being compassionate and not giving myself a break and always feeling like I had to do a little bit more and a little bit more. And I literally ended up, I can remember so clearly, like a moment, you know, you remember a moment. Mm-hmm. I was driving in the car. I'd had 3-year-old and a little baby in the back. And I was just like, I just didn't know what to do with myself. Mm-hmm. And I pulled over into the, to a lay-by, and I just ugly cried for about half an hour, sobbing with the kids in the back going, "Mummy, you know, 3-year-old mummy, what's wrong?" And the baby crying. And I was like, I need to do something about this. So I actually went to see a therapist who said, "Oh, have you heard of mindfulness?" And that's kind of how I came to it. And I did a course, an 8-week course, and started practicing. And my pain got so much better, but also my mental pain relieved. And I started noticing things like my baby smiling and being able to get up in the morning and, I don't know, in like, taste food. It sounds so silly, but like all these small things, I felt like I'd been going through my life and everything was gray, like black and white. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like little bits of color started coming in. So that was a big moment for me in terms of self-compassion. However, as part of that course, they gave you, because it was back in the day where you had CDs rather than listen to an app.
Yeah.
And I did various meditations, body scan, awareness of breath, but one of them was a loving kindness meditation. I listened to it and I was like, I don't like this one. And I gave it back to the teacher. I said, it's a waste of time giving it to me, and gave it back to her. And she was like, why don't you just keep it just in case? And because I just kept listening to it, and I was like, it's like, this is a load of rubbish. I can't, like, it's like notes of, may you be happy, may you be loved. Like, I'm seriously, this is not my vibe. Anyway, I would say there was a lot that, and this is, it's a really important reason I mention it. It's very important about self-compassion and loving kindness. Is it's not like one day it's like there. It's such a slow burn. It was 10 years later, I was on a silent retreat and I sat there like watching two fantail birds, like doing, you know, this is somebody who doesn't sit. And all of a sudden I went, this is the kindest thing I've done for myself for years. Wow. And then at that moment I was like, that's why I couldn't listen to the CDs, because it was a block. So I wanted to say that, because I think some people, it's a block. You think it's not for you, mm-hmm. but just keep at it. It's a slow burn.
Yeah. You aren't ready to hear that message just yet.
No, that. So 10 years to really get the message of, I need to go. Excuse the phrase, because I've said I go hard or go home, but I need to go a bit harder on this, because there's something in this for me. There really is. This could be a game changer. And it was.
Well, it's so, I love that you've shared this, because I hear this story a lot without the shift. Mm. Like women and men, they're just staying in it. And I don't know. I mean, because it's hard to change. I personally think there's some worthiness like wrapped up in it. Like, I don't deserve to feel this good or whatever. But I love when people like you share their stories, because people can see there's another way. It doesn't have to be, I stay in this banking industry until I retire, burnt out, not there for my kids, overweight, you know, not taking care of myself. That wouldn't have been your story necessarily, but that's what I see. You know, women just giving everything to their job and everyone else, but nothing to themselves.
Yeah. And it may be, you know, I think it could be that it turns up in terms of your physical health, in terms of you have put on weight, or you're not getting to spend any time on yourself, or your relationship. Mm-hmm. For me, there was a lot of that physical burnout, because I got to the point, even though I'd started practicing mindfulness, all those years of pushing my body, I ended up getting an autoimmune and getting really bad arthritis in my hips and having to have a double hip replacement. Yes. And fortunately, I'd started to practice a lot of, you know, gradually started to practice being a bit kinder to myself. But when I had the double hip replacement, I had to sit for a long time, which kind of amped up my mindfulness practice, because really it's like you It's about sitting with the nature of reality. Right. And sometimes the nature of reality is that it sucks, you know? How can you be with the suck and not try to numb that suck by binge watching Netflix or going and drinking a bottle of wine? Or for me, it was going out and running and running and running. So my body hurt so much, I didn't feel anything else. Mm-hmm. And I had to sort of sit as I was recovering. And that was a real, that was almost like a self-compassion and mindfulness retreat to just sit with myself and really reflect on how I'd got there. And that was when I actually decided, because that was 6 years ago, that I was going to leave the corporate world. Yeah. I was like, this is not serving me anymore. Life is short. It's precious. Mm-hmm. I have talents I can give to the world and also at the same time nourish myself. And so I think I need to leave this environment, because as long as I'm in this environment, I'm going to be competitive. I'm going to be all the worst traits of myself that my superpowers end up becoming my Achilles heel. And I think that's why we see a lot of burnout. Like, people think burnout is an individual problem. Like, there's something wrong with you individually, but sometimes you have to remove yourself from, and I realized I had to remove myself from an environment that wasn't helping me so that I could then be compassionate to myself and look after myself.
So powerful. I love that question. Like, how did I get here? I've had a podcast episode about burnout, but your burnout, like, people are talking about it now. I feel like you were like ahead of the curve. What year was
I told you I'm an overachiever.
Yeah, you are a trendsetter.
In the worst possible way. I want to overachieve in something that's going to, right? You know, be helpful.
So your oldest was how old? Three.
So when I initially had the bout of postnatal depression, and I started getting all my physical kind of problems, because I'd had a really robust body up until then. I never got injured. Yeah. So that was when it would be like 12 years ago now. So okay. 12 years ago. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You started it. Good for you.
Yeah. But I think it's been there for a lot of people, but maybe we've not talked about it.
100%.
Which makes you think, like, it's me. Something wrong with me. And then what I think is beautiful about the age that we're in now, there are many things that are a challenge, but we're starting to talk about stuff like this. We're starting to talk about and share how we're feeling, share what's going on for us, share some of our vulnerabilities, our insecurities, our mistakes. And in doing so, other people are going, me too. And it kind of normalizes it, as much as I don't know if normal is even a word, because what is normal? But it's, you know, something around self-compassion. And, you know, to explain what my definition of compassion really is to be with suffering. Okay. To be with suffering. It's different to kindness. And self-compassion is to be with your own suffering. You know, so it's hard to be with suffering. It's easier to be with someone else's suffering, but to be with your own suffering, it's hard. We'll escape it at any cost. But someone else that we care about, you know, we want to be of service to them, but we often don't really want, or we don't know how to be of service to ourselves. So I think, you know, knowing that it's like that, self-compassion really asks the question, what do you need? You know, that's a really important question to ask yourself and then give it to you. It doesn't ask, what do I want? Mm-hmm. And so, like, looking at that and bringing that in can be so unbelievably helpful, but people don't do it. And they just don't, they don't know how to be with their own suffering. And it's also not to make yourself feel better. We often practice self-compassion because we feel bad. Kindness can help us feel better, but is so to know that you don't practice self-compassion necessarily to feel better, but because you feel bad. I think that's a really important twist to put on it.
Yeah. So correct me if I'm interpreting this correctly. So the self-compassion, it's not to feel better, but it's more to bring that mindfulness in and see how I'm feeling and be with that feeling no matter what it is.
Yeah, you've got to notice maybe it is a point of suffering. And just going back to that, like, how other people talking about it really helps. When somebody else talks about you know, that they're feeling the same as you, the phrase other people feel this too, that's a really useful thing as well that kind of helps us in a compassionate, in a moment of when we might need compassion. So the mindfulness, so you mentioned about the mindfulness. So Kristin Neff, who's a really renowned in the world of self-compassion and kind of bringing it more into the Western world, and she's a researcher in self-compassion, she talks about this three-step model, which is the first step is mindfulness, which is really to bring awareness to a moment of suffering. So you're aware that in this moment, I'm really beating myself up because I didn't meet that deadline that I needed to, or because, you know, I started an eating plan and I haven't stuck to it, or because I didn't, you know, I didn't manage to get to my kid's school play today. I don't know, whatever it is for you, but you notice that you're starting to criticize yourself. That's a moment of suffering. Suffering isn't just physical suffering. A lot of the suffering is the way we talk to ourselves. So bringing awareness to that, bringing awareness to the fact this is a moment of suffering for me. That's the mindfulness. The second step is bringing some kindness to that. Mm-hmm. How can I just if kindness is really hard, I say just be friendly. Just feel friendliness. Maybe that's more accessible. Mm-hmm. What if a friend was suffering right now, what would I do for her or him? What would I offer? So bringing that kind of gentle sort of balm of kindness. And then the third part is the knowing that out there, this kind of interconnectedness, that other people feel this as well. You're not defective. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you don't need fixing. Mm. It's a moment of pain, a moment of suffering. And that is incredibly, I think, incredibly helpful. I mean, we've seen it probably in COVID, knowing that so many people are probably going through the same thing. You don't want other people to suffer, but knowing that this is a collective thing. And so whatever it is that you're feeling in that moment of pain, there will be somebody out there that can relate and has felt that or is feeling that right now.
That does make you feel so much better. And it's talking about therapy, like anytime I'm in therapy talking about something, I'm always like, I mean, do you do this too? It's just like, yes, Kylie, everybody does this.
Yeah.
You are not special.
So you're not giving yourself like the D minus on life. You're like, oh no, like other people. So helpful, which I think is why people like Brené Brown who talk about vulnerability, that's why that TED talk went so viral, because all of a sudden, like, somebody's putting a name and a story behind what we all maybe have been feeling, but don't want to share it. And the other thing that's so powerful about us kind of vulnerability and starting to tap into that, particularly when we connect like to others, is that it does kind of really make us feel like less alone, more connected to people around us, you know, and loneliness is one of the biggest causes of death, like loneliness. If you look at the stats around loneliness, it ages you. It's people that are lonely are more likely to die younger. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even self-compassion sort of starts to bring, you know, that connection in rather than loneliness.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about mindfulness, like what if someone doesn't understand what that means? Like what is mindfulness? How do you practice it?
Yeah. So it's interesting because, I think mindfulness needs a rebrand in the world because people think mindfulness is about being calm and zen and, you know, sitting like a Buddha, and it's so not. You may become calmer because you practice mindfulness. So I mentioned that mindfulness is a little bit around sort of being able to be present and experience the nature of reality. So it's a way of being present with what's happening in the moment, mm-hmm. knowing that that might suck or that might sing. Mm-hmm. So if it sucks, how can you be with it and move through it in a more helpful way? So we talked about compassion. This is happening to me right now. But also, how can you be in your life and notice all the moments that sing and that are amazing, which we can also miss? You know, research shows that we're present about half the time. So what are you missing when you're not present? What are you missing when your mind goes off or you're scrolling through social media? Probably really beautiful, precious moments. And then bringing that kind of presence into the world in a way that is open, or you could say open-hearted. Sometimes that's a stretch, so I just say open rather than judgy, yeah? Or at least noticing the judgment.
Yeah.
Because we're all going to have judgments. When you look at the definition by Jon Kabat-Zinn, it sort of says without judgment, but he also talks about it like it's very hard not to have any judgments because we're conditioned to have these preconceived judgments since we were born. Mm-hmm. So, but if you can be aware, and that's really like what bias is. Bias is a judgment, you know, which has come from your conditioning.
Yeah.
And maybe that is correct, but maybe it isn't because everything's changing all around you. So something that was a correct assumption in the past might not be a correct assumption now. Mm-hmm. And we do it a lot with people, you know. I met that person when I was 16 years old and she was a right old bag. I didn't like her. So of course, when she's 40, she's still going to be the same.
Oh, she must be the same.
We file it away. So
it's like that name. You're like, can't hear the name. Like, ugh, I hate that name.
I know, because I knew someone I didn't like that was like,
So, you know, speaking of this conditioning and, you know, so much of how we are is because of how we were raised.
Yeah.
How does this impact you parenting? You have three boys. Mm. What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, my parenting's very different now. Yeah. So one of the other things that, you know, when I was recovering from my hip op, one of the things I'd also noticed is that I just wasn't as present as a parent. Mm-hmm. I was working long hours, you know, 70 plus hour weeks, traveling a lot, and always stressed out, like impatient, you know, just, you know, snapping. I'll be honest, like I wasn't proud of the kind of person I was, and I wasn't giving my children enough time. Mm-hmm. And I knew that that's one of the things I wanted to change. So in terms of how I turn up as a parent now, I actually had a really beautiful moment with one of my children. So my middle son, he gets anxiety too, and he was with a therapist quite recently, and I picked him up afterwards and he was telling me about what he was talking about. Cool. And I said to him, did you say anything about me? You
know, always.
Bringing it back to me. And he was like, oh, she kind of asked me, you know, what you were like, and I talked about you, and I was like, what did you say? And he said, I said that you are really calm and you help me with my emotions and you're really loving and caring and always have time for me. And I got all like very emotional because that is not what he would have said 5 years ago. He wouldn't have said that. He would have said that. They wouldn't have said like I was a horrible mum, but they would have said mum's always stressed, yeah. You know, mum's always busy. And I kind of felt, for me, that was a real endorsement of the changes I've made in my life, because it wasn't easy. When I left the corporate world, it was literally like stepping away from my crack cocaine, yeah. You know?
Yes.
And it felt, the first 3 months when I left the corporate world, I had no idea what I was going to do. I just knew I needed to leave. Mm-hmm. And I felt like every morning I'd wake up anxious. I felt like my identity had been taken away from me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who I was. I just, everything was telling me to just go back and do some consulting or go, all everything. It was like a magnetic force. And I had to use my mindfulness practice. And I realized I didn't tell you how we practice mindfulness, so I'll come back to that. And I just had to, again, I had to sit with discomfort, like sit with discomfort. And eventually what happens is it burns off.
Yeah.
And through that, I started thinking, what do I really want to do? And that's how my business started. By accident, someone phoned up and said, oh, I hear you've left the corporate world, but we really like how your views on leadership and change, and we'd love you to come and do some work with our leaders. And I had started doing my mindfulness teacher training as well. And so I just created this kind of half-day program for leaders around mindful leadership. And that's kind of how it started, with one gig that they loved it. And then they told someone else. And then I started doing more personal groups. I have people come to my house and I run mindfulness courses here as well. And then I started doing the work on emotions. So it was a beautiful accident. I had no intention and I did everything completely probably wrong or different. I didn't have a business plan. I didn't have my goals and my intention setting. It was like literally like an experiment for a couple of years before we actually started. But I could have so easily not been doing the stuff that I do now, which I absolutely love. And it's like, I say it's my dharma, like my calling.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If that magnetic force had dragged me, and I think as, you know, I see it a lot with women, we've got this magnetic force that's taking us along. And what it's doing is if we don't fight and rebel it, it's taking us away from our core values, from our heart. Mm-hmm. And then we wonder why do we feel so disconnected? Something's not right and we're not quite sure. Why are we so tired?
Yeah.
Why are we such a pain in the ass to be around sometimes? Yeah. I don't
know.
You've
got all the things. You've got a partner. You've got the kids. You're making the money. Why am I not?
Something's empty. You feel empty in some way and you're not sure what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think one of the most important things you can do when you feel uncomfortable is to sit and do nothing and sit with that, bring loving kindness or compassion in, but sit there and see what comes up, which is what that's how you practice mindfulness. You sit and you meditate. And when you meditate, it's not like you think, it's not like there's some person in your mind playing a harp and some, you know, rainbows or something. Mm-hmm. There's this crap of your in your mind that you're literally looking at that's like bouncing around, and then there's a voice going, oh no, you go and do something else, you're just wasting time sitting here. And you've literally got to sit and like, it's like all these little thoughts are trying to take you away from it, but they're not taking you away to something that's helpful. You think they are because it's a habit, and you have to sit. And as you sit, it's like shaking a snow globe. You shake a snow globe and the snow's everywhere, and you sit it down and the snow doesn't settle straight away. It needs to sit there for a while, and gradually the snow settles and you see the clarity of what's really there. Mm-hmm. That's what meditation does for you. It's not always pleasant. It's not like self-care practices like a massage that feels all lovely. Mm-hmm. It can feel crap. Like I can sit with my mind some days and go, oh my goodness, where did this one come from?
I have to talk about this magnet thing again, just to like, a lot of the women that I work with, some of them, at least in the beginning, they struggle with rest days and taking days off and time off. And it's like that magnet that's pulling them, but that's not necessarily going to be the thing that serves them. But it's like this uncomfortableness. And I talk about like, it's like an addiction. Like you have to get over that hump of, I don't need a drink. I don't need a drink. I don't need a drink. You finally make it through the day without a drink. You're like, I can do this. Okay.
Yeah. And it takes time. It takes time and kind of going through as all things actually that become really valuable, profound, and make you feel like you've like proud. Mm-hmm. They will take time. Yeah. There's no quick fix on that. I mean, there's nothing that you can get in this world mm-hmm. that in the long term feels good. And I think this, we hear a lot about, you know, not enough, like that core belief that a lot of people have about not being enough. Mm-hmm. And I think people that and most people feel that quite deeply, I think, is that I'm not enough, because I think that's what our whole society is telling us all the time. We have to do more, be more, buy more, go faster, go harder. Mm-hmm. And so you know, it's from that, it's like a vacuum. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of know that the things that actually really are going to be filling you up, mm-hmm. they take time. Mm-hmm. Because and what I found is that when you don't feel enough, you look for things. So I look for winning a race, or I look for making my body look amazing, or I look for having a really great career or mm-hmm. something. But and then you achieve it. You know, I've achieved some great things, I guess, like, you know, I've won races, medals, leadership awards, things like that. And they feel great in the moment. And then they're shallow. There's nothing there. It doesn't last. It's like a quick fix. The things that last are when you actually start to form a relationship with yourself mm-hmm. and start to, I mean, as cheesy as it may sound to some, when you start to really love yourself, mm-hmm. love the guts out of yourself, the messy parts as well, because true love is actually is loving the messy as well as the beauty, like, you know, a really it's unconditional. Mm-hmm. When you start to love yourself like that, you don't need those things. You don't need the awards and the accolades and the people telling you look amazing and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. It might be nice to hear it, but you don't need it like a drug, because everything you need is here. Does that make sense? Or am I going off on a rant?
No, it makes total sense, because like I also, I mean, I'm just so like you. I think there's so many of us that are like this. Like, you've done the things and they feel great in the moment, but then at the end of the day, like, I feel like your son, how he described you to your therapist, that, I mean, I know that's not self-love, but that's a sign that you've done the work. And that's something that's what matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you can also just hold yourself and love yourself. It was interesting. There was an experience that happened recently that was quite interesting for me. It was actually on social media. I'm quite active on LinkedIn. That's probably my most active forum. And I put a post that kind of went viral, and it was around emotional contagion in the workplace. Anyway, I used a term, which was a term that's kind of okay here, but it obviously was quite polarizing. And this post, like, it went viral. It got like well over 1 million views. It had like 10,000 shares. It was like really, really popular. But the comments, most people like really were loving it. It was all about like, when you go into a meeting, what's the energy that you're bringing?
Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, don't be, and the term I used, which is a term I didn't realize, and some people didn't like it, was, you know, what's your juju you're bringing in? What's your emotional juju you're bringing in? Don't be that person that brings the bad juju, you know? And so it was all about just being mindful before you go in. Well, most people loved it, but there were a few people, there were some really, really awful comments as well, like saying, this is a terrible term, and this is what I would use as the opposite of a good workplace culture. And there's some really nasty comments. Well, I know you're more, you know, out there on social media, but for me, getting these like really negative and some really nasty comments was quite new for me. And I started like looking at it, and I was like feeling like that I needed to respond and justify that actually I wasn't trying to be judgmental, but there was like, and 95% of them were great comments. But the reason I bring it up is because I think the Lottie of 5 or 10 years ago, I'd have had to justify everything. It would almost have been like this kind of othering, you know, kind of this back and forth. And instead, I was just like, that's interesting. Their comments are not about me. Their comments are probably more about them. And I didn't feel the need to respond. And I didn't beat myself up. And I didn't feel bad. I just knew that in my heart, I'd put something that I really believed in and had really good intent. And it was a sign to me again that my self-compassion practice is strong, because I didn't feel bad about myself. I made sure I just put like a statement of, this was how it was meant. I'm sorry if it offends some people, it wasn't meant to. And just left it at that, drew a line under it. And even though things started coming in, and for me, it was kind of a really good metaphor in terms of when we're highly reactive, that's often a sign that we're not compassionate.
Yes.
And I think bringing that mindfulness is the first step of, if you're reactive, if somebody says something, like I always say now, what other people think of me is none of my business. As long as I know that I'm mean the right thing, I've got the right intent and everything like that, actually don't be reactive. I'm getting caught into that reactivity, which will then make me show up in a way that's not helpful to me and actually not helpful to everyone around me. But we see it so often, this playing out, you know, on social media. We see it all the time.
I know. I like when Brené Brown talks about, you know, when we start to hustle for our worthiness, that's when we start to lose ourselves. I mean, I've seen that in myself. And now that I have, you know, I'm more aware, I'm like, oh, you're doing that thing, Kylie. Let's not do that thing. It's just so amazing.
Yeah. And I think you talked about something around how sometimes looking at someone that makes you react, it's a mirror. And so for me, like, I notice that if I'm reactive, that's a mirror of something in myself. So what is it in myself that I'm not liking? And then again, it comes back to that question, what do I need? What do I need in this moment? And so when I talk about self-compassion, I also talk about enemies of self-compassion, which is really powerful. And, you know, one of the enemies of self-compassion is the enemies we know are really obvious, like cruelty, but these are the sneaky ones. They're like the far enemies. And one of them is overwhelm. And also self-pity, overwhelm and self-pity. And overwhelm, it gets in the way of actually being compassionate. Like, and so many people are overwhelmed. So if you're overwhelmed, right there, you'll know there's probably a block to self-compassion. That's a moment of mindfulness in itself.
I hope everyone who is listening, because like you said, I think the majority of people I know right now are overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So like, ears on, everyone. Yeah.
And it's interesting because when you're in overwhelm, it's I've heard it described as life is unfolding in a way so quickly that your mind and body cannot keep up with. Mm-hmm. And so what the world, that magnetic force is telling you is you need to go faster, harder, because there's so much. But actually, really what your center is telling you to do, which is why we often procrastinate when we're overwhelmed as well, is to stop and pause. Because in that moment of which, again, you know, it could be you meditate or it could be you just sit down with a cup of tea and do the exact opposite to what that magnetic force is telling you that you need to do, which is go harder until you literally get to a point where you just completely burn out, flat, can't do anymore. You need to pause. Like Brené Brown talks, she calls it being in the weeds, and she gives a beautiful story in her Atlas of the Heart book of when they were overwhelmed as waitresses and everybody would know, and they said she's in the weeds and they would just send her outside to have a break. Mm-hmm. Because they know in that point she can't go any harder on the table, she can't go any faster, she just needs a break. And I'd love to see more women, more people, everyone be bringing that in. You know, we are not robots. We are human beings. Yes, we only have so much time. We only have so much energy. Mm-hmm. The modern working world is treating us like a robot, and it's got to change. And it is changing, but slowly. So we have to take our own kind of humanity back. You know, you're not.
You have to raise your hand. Like, I'm not in that place anymore. So. Meaning I don't work for someone else. I don't need it. I can't tell anyone I'm in the weeds except for me. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And yet we think, oh, there's something wrong. I'm not good enough. Or we feel we're imposter or we're defective in some way. No, like everything around us, the world has moved to like ninja level and like superhuman ninja level, and that we just can't keep up with. And it's why so many people are burning out. It's why there's so many autoimmune. You know, I've got an autoimmune. 100%. That's from ongoing, like just working my body and my mind. It's why we're seeing such a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why we're hearing things like the Great Resignation and quiet quitting. Mm-hmm. I like to think quiet quitting is purely people actually rebelling against this system and taking.
I'm all for the quiet quitting. Yes,
totally. And I hate the fact they call it quiet quitting. I like to think it's more of an active work-life balance rebellion. That's what we should call it.
It's me saying I know my worth and that you're going to get what you pay me for and nothing more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for that. And if I were an employer and I noticed that, of course, you know, I'm not a huge corporation, but I would like take action and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize you felt this way. What can I do? But that's me. I was thinking about this. I think about this a lot because think about how many ways you can get a hold of someone. Like you're getting messages on LinkedIn, you're getting messages on Facebook, your messages on Instagram, you're getting messages in your email, you're getting text messages. It's like, it's too much. It's too much.
Yeah. And so it's like this kind of, you have to almost have an intervention of yourself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so just even the way I use social media, the way I use, just the way I work has changed. Mm-hmm. And also like looking at your relationship with things like that is why you're going on. Is that dopamine fix, which again is like that quick hit where actually the thing that's going to be more profound is going to take a bit longer and going a bit deeper. But absolutely. The other thing as well, because I know that people that find it really hard to be compassionate to themselves or to stop are still possibly not convinced, But, you know, when it for women who quite often have bad body images, the other thing that I've really noticed that's been beneficial is my relationship with my body has completely changed.
Yeah.
I won't lie. I've been very, quite vain, very obsessed with, you know, I used to get so depressed if my, like, I don't know, looking in the mirror, I would, things didn't turn up or aging or, you know, I'm 50 next month. And, you know, my body might not look like it did 20 years ago, but I love my body for what it does to me. If ever I have an old habit come up of, you know, you kind of, I don't know, I used to pat down my hips in front of the mirror,
yeah, the body
or looking, you know, all of that. I used to look in the mirror a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. When I notice that, I then, or there's something like, oh, it doesn't look, you know, my thighs look muscly or something about my body I don't like. I catch myself, moment of mindfulness, the first step of the self-compassion model. And then I just thank it, because actually my body's given me 3 children. My body has run marathons. My body has got me to nearly 50 years old, you know, and walks up mountains and things like that. And, you know, actually having love for it almost as, I know it's part of you, but as a separate thing, like talking to it in a way that is compassionate, has been a game changer, because I spent so much of my time really worrying about how I looked.
Yep.
And it's all energy I could have put into so many other parts of my life that I've missed, you know?
I think about that a lot, and thank goodness, like, we've changed and evolved. And I know I used to also spend a lot of time looking at myself and also taking pictures of myself. And it was like last year or 2 years ago, I realized, it's like, you're not taking those pictures. You're not taking as many pictures of yourself. And I was like, this is a sign of progress. I know it sounds silly, but it really was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
So much attention and energy was going there.
And it's like, I still take pride in myself. Mm-hmm. With any of the things that happen in life, whether it be work, whether it be exercise, whether it be, you know, fitness and like how our body looks, there's nothing wrong with doing all of those things. Like you know, if they give you, are they giving you energy? Are they nourishing you? But if they become to a point where you're worrying, you're spending a lot of energy, it's keeping you up, you're noticing negative thought patterns for any of them. It could be a relationship. It doesn't, you know, the body is just an example. It's then that you have to ask, what is this worth it? What do I really need here? What am I putting my energy into that's not helping me? And the other question I ask is this draining or is this nourishing for me?
Love it.
Mm-hmm. You know, like for all the things that I do, and that's what I noticed with my job before I left my last job, it was draining. There was nothing about it that nourished me or gave me energy. You can have a job that can be physically tiring or mentally tiring. But if you, I mean, you work, I see how hard you work, Kylie, and I work hard too, but it's like, I love it, you know, I love what I do. It on a emotional and energetic level, deep inside, it fills me up. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I don't need rest and I don't need downtime, but it fills me up. And if it didn't, then it would be the wrong thing to do. So I think asking that question is to ourselves of, is this nourishing or is this draining? You can even do an activity through the day where you just look at a typical day and everything you do, and you put an N or a D next to it based on whether it nourishes you or drains you. And it can be, it's like an audit, really. And that can be very powerful. And sometimes it's just that it's always going to be draining, but sometimes it's the attitude we bring. I think children are a classic example of that. Reading them a story at night, you could say it's draining, but is it the attitude? Could you make it more of a nourishing thing, or find something else to do with your children that connects, that was nourishing, you know? Yeah.
I've always hated bedtime. put Brooks to bed. But yes, it's my attitude. It has nothing to do with that process.
But there's probably other things you do with your son that are like, you know, it's and him. You're like, this is your moment. This is your thing that you do. And that nourishes both of you, and you connect in the process.
Yes. Well, this relationship with body, I'm so glad that you brought this up, because, I mean, as you know, we work with the perimenopausal and postmenopausal women. And this is the time when self-compassion towards our bodies is so important, because our bodies are changing. We cannot fight it. We can work on it, and we just have to get through this hump. There are going to be shifts. It's our second puberty, but us not being compassionate with ourselves is making it even harder.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how, like, I just feel like we need to communicate this to all the women out there.
It is. And it was particularly because of that mind body connection. I think we talked about it briefly before the call started. Like, they're so interconnected. Like, if I'm stressed out, then I'm going to, an autoimmune flare is bound to come up. You know, it's almost kind of feel it cooking away. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because life is hard enough. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, life is hard enough, and actually changes are happening all the time, whether you're in perimenopause or not. Things are happening on a physical and mental level all the time. You know, there's not just, change isn't just reserved to pockets of our life. There's more change in certain areas of our life. And I think what perimenopause does, you know, being in it myself, is I think it can bring up a lot of insecurities that you thought weren't there that you packed down. Yeah. If you've got an issue maybe with the fact that you're aging, or that it signifies, I don't know, people look at, you know, particularly for women, we're like, we're seen in a different way. Mm-hmm. Men don't seem to get it so hard. I mean, they have other challenges. Mm-hmm. And so because you've got so many things going on kind of physiologically in your body, and, you know, we know that our hormones and our mind are all linked together. If you're then not bringing in self-compassion, if you're thinking about it more, it's like putting lighter fuel on your situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fortunate to, one, have come across people like yourself, and I think your group is amazing. And believe me, I've signed up to quite a few fitness programs in my time.
Thank you.
and like, this one is a keeper, and I love that it's such a 360 view of well-being and, like, you know, really flourishing as a woman. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're in this time, it's like then looking at, well, what can I do for myself to actually manage these symptoms? They're not going to go away completely, but how can I smooth this ride? And I've got another couple of friends that really, like, look at menopause as well. So I was really clear up front, I need to start to look at my menopause ride before I even noticed that my hormones and that were changing. Because I'm an overachiever, A-type personality, I had a feeling that if I didn't, it was going to be a really rocky ride. Yeah. And this is like, you know, I talked about me having a career and change, like managing change is like, change is going to happen. There's going to be some stuff about it that's hard. But if you can be intentional and go, how do I want to feel through this? Mm-hmm. How do I not want to feel? What can I do for myself to help that ride? Then it's going to be way smoother. You know, it might be kind of a little bit like this, but it's not going to be like this.
Yeah.
And so it's like, we can get in our own way so easily. So I think that self-compassion is like, give myself a break. There is some stuff going on here. What do I need? What does my body need? Mm-hmm. I know you talk about the body always wins. The body always totally does win, mm-hmm. you know, and the body's always giving you signs when you're busy and rushing around, possibly to not want to look at those signs. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. It will just get louder and louder and louder until it's like a foghorn and so painful that it will stop you in your tracks till you've literally no choice but to listen to it. And but you can, if you start to really listen early and slow down, and women, even if you're not in perimenopause, like, prepare yourself now.
Because it is so a practice. I think you do have to practice this stuff. I mean, what do you say to the woman who she thinks taking a break and listening to herself is like soft, and she's like, no, I need more discipline. How do you work with a personality like that?
Well, I think I start by actually really getting them to kind of connect to their emotions. What's important to you? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I start at the heart. What do you really care about? What's important to you? Who do you care about? And that's a really good place to start. When you start to get people to think about their values and what they care about, you bring them back to the heart. It's a much easier place to work from. And then I'll just ask what I call beautiful questions, which are questions that you ask, and they might not have an answer right now, but just by asking them, this little ripple starts to happen. So what would allow you to live a life without regret? Mm. What would a life imbued with kindness look like for you? why do you think that might be important? You know, and they might start with a life imbued with kindness, might not even involve them, but actually it always will come back to them. So I'll ask some of those questions. And don't get me wrong, if someone's got a complete block against it, it will take time. Yeah. It will take time. Sometimes months, sometimes years. I mean, I told you, for me, like, it's taken years. Uh-huh. And it's like it's not like a gush. It's like a drip, drip, drip. But asking those questions, you'll be amazed how profound that is. Get them connected to what's important to them. Because actually, how they, if they think tender, you know, this kind of tender discipline, which I talk about, which is, you know, actually, how can you be a disciple to yourself, which is what discipline's about. Yeah. You know, you kind of get them to start with asking some of those questions. What does discipline look like for you now? Why would that be so? Why do you think you're failing if you don't deliver this? Mm-hmm. Who do you care about? So those kind of questions can be really opening. And then they just start to have aha moments, and they're moments of mindfulness in and of themselves, because it's self-awareness.
Yeah. Wow. I bet your sessions with corporate groups are just absolutely amazing.
I'd like to think that they've still got an imposter, Kylie. So I'm always like, was that good enough? Are they getting it? Are they really bored? Are they just smiling and saying it's good for the sake of it? But it is. Like, I have to say, like, I ran this retreat last week, which was just for mental health awareness, the Kind Mind Retreat. And we did the self-compassion talk. We did a mindfulness and ACT, acceptance commitment therapy, which is kind of mindfulness with legs on. We did a session on the imposter syndrome. We did a well-being deck session, which was all around people kind of, how do they need to feel to thrive in their lives? And at the end of it, like, people had breakthroughs just in that day. And I had some amazing, like, little testimonials sent through. And I said to my husband, oh my, because it's all for charity. I wasn't getting paid for it. And I said, this is why I do what I do. Like, wow. There's some women had some such aha moments, bearing in mind that it wasn't a women only retreat day, but I had one man to sign up. All the rest were women. Mm. And that makes me sad, because I do think men need this as well. And if actually more men were self-compassionate, there'd probably be more, you know, more men that weren't jerks as well.
Self-compassion for all.
Yeah, exactly. Because we've got so much more in common than we think we have. It is powerful stuff. One of the other reasons I do it is because it reminds me how important this is every time. I think if I wasn't doing this for a living, I would, you know, I could easily fall off the wagon of self-compassion and mindfulness.
Truly. You know, I say that all the time. Like, one of the things that has just helped me, like, reframe everything that I think about nutrition and fitness and the way that I talk to myself is working with others and having to preach the same stuff over and over again, because I have to learn it every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're out there and you're like, well, to be honest, I think if anybody listens to this far in the podcast, they must be a bit curious. Otherwise, they've just gone, yeah, the first few minutes, I'm not listening to that. But normally the people that feel there's nothing there for them are, you need this. You do. If you're still listening, there is nobody on this planet that doesn't thrive without compassion.
Seriously. Oh my gosh, Lottie. Well, how can we find you? We can find you on LinkedIn, it sounds like.
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, Lottie.Roberts, Lottie with a Y. I have got a website, but my website is actually under development. I've got a new website in the making, which is taking way too long, and I'm having to be patient and compassionate and all of that. So that's Mind You. It's mindu.co.nz. And I also am on Instagram, Lottie.Roberts as well. My social media relationship, just so you know, is a little bit bipolar. Sometimes I post a lot, sometimes not as much, because I actually like say to myself, if I don't really have anything in there today, I'm just not going to post.
Yeah.
That's been my, you know, if I'm just posting to show a presence, I'm probably not going to give my best vibes. So it's only when I've got something to share that I feel is inspirational, or educational, or funny.
Yes, I do like
to laugh.
It's so funny when you feel so connected to someone, and you know, it's just so funny because you're across the world, but I'm like, oh my gosh, she gets me. We have the same sense of humor.
Yeah,
it's just.
And when social media work, like that's the thing, I've met so many amazing people via social media that I feel so connected to, and that's social media when it's working well. Yeah. And actually coming back to the nourishing and draining, you can make your social media feed nourishing and draining. When you go through anything, be aware, anything that makes you feel bad about yourself or drains you, unfollow that. Yeah. And anything, so get like, just see what makes you, what fills you up. Mm-hmm. And what takes something away from you or makes you feel lesser than. And if you actually like create your feed to that, you're going to feel so much better, so much better.
That, I mean, I think that would be a great like first thing to do, everyone. Just clean up that feed.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Lottie. Well, this was, I mean, I always get so much out of your chats. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you. And hopefully you can come back and we can talk more about emotions.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, that's something I get all excited about as well.
Well, thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a cool chat.
Anytime. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Wasn't that so powerful? I feel like this is one of those episodes that you will be sharing with your friends, your colleagues, anyone else who needs this message, which as I mentioned in the intro, it's like everyone. And I have to tell you guys, this is one of the missing pieces to your transformation process, right? Through Lift to Get Lean, we incorporate this piece of self-compassion because it's only going to make the process more enjoyable if you can work towards your goals while exhibiting and exercising some self-compassion. You cannot bully or belittle yourself into a new body. And those of you in perimenopause, right? This is a time where we really need to give ourselves a little bit more self-compassion as our bodies change and evolve. So if you're interested in a program that not only teaches you all about the nutrition, that not only teaches you all about the training, but then also brings in this mindfulness aspect and this piece of self-compassion, join us in our next round of Lift to Get Lean and Lift to Get Lean Revive. We're going to start on Monday, October 24th. Registration is now open at lifttogetleanwithkylie.com for both programs. And we'd love to work with you. This really is the missing piece, y'all. Until next time, bye-bye.